Happy Tuesday. It is the Ira Kaufman podcast, a week away from free agency. Steve Isbitt's here of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper is back from his excursion to Indianapolis. And of course, the sage of Tampa Bay sports is here, Ira Kaufman. We are presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Sage, Ira, all of the new offers right now, they're right there for March on EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. These are Hillsborough County's Cadillac dealerships. Over 70 years of Ed Morse excellence across Florida. Stunning stuff. I definitely recommend everybody to get over there. We're going to be over there probably the end of the month, Ira, and you'll get some new gear, and we'll talk Cadillacs. How about that?
Looking forward to it. I need a couple of new colors for my shirts over there, my friends, to advertise what's going on at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Always had great dealings with those guys. The deals keep going on. It's March. I don't know any big holidays that are coming up, Steve, but these guys are not ruled by holiday. They're ruled by bargains.
Wait a minute. March, and you don't know about holidays coming up? There's not Passover. There's not – well, we're in the middle of Lent.
That doesn't
there's
count.
Easter.
Doesn't count. We're in West Central Florida, the Kemper. We're in West Central Florida.
How about Easter for the
– Steve, I'm trying to decompress from the Big Apple. I just spent 5 days in New York. It was a whirlwind, an absolute whirlwind. I got a couple of stories from New York. The Kemper's got a few from Indy. Between us – we're going to regale some of our listeners. They better not be driving too fast because they may go off the road. May I start, Isbitts, with a little teaser? Just a little teaser.
Well, first, let me tease you with 2018 XT5, the famous crossover, $339 a month, zero down. All the details at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa.
I want it. Sold.
That's one of the great offers on JoeBucksFan.com right now. And definitely check them out, EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. So, Ira, let me just remind everybody, you were in New York for the last 5 days. You went to the opera. You stalked Barbara Streisand's condo. Tell us what you need to tell us.
All right. Well, they call this a teaser. You know, I'm not in TV. I don't know all these terms over there, Lee, but it's a teaser. Any breaking news from CNN, and they better stop with that.
Breaking.
Anyway, we saw three plays and went to the opera. In four consecutive nights. Now, that ain't bad. And I want to tell you that the second play, which was called Once on This Island, it's in a Caribbean island. And no, there weren't any Buck fans that I there was a goat on the stage. There
Sabby.
Was a goat. And Sabby. Anyway, we're sitting over there. It's a theater in the round, totally circular around the stage. You know, I got my seat over there, and some woman comes next to me, and the play's about to, you know, the lights are about to go down. I look down, she's got a satchel. What woman comes in with a satchel? Well, I look a little further. She's got a schnauzer in the satchel. Hoop. What the hell's going on? I've been out of New York for 30 years. I don't remember people bringing dogs to the theater. What's going on here,
I think
Lee?
It's called an emotional mongrel.
This is a lapse of decorum, Mr. Isbitts. Where is the respect for the Broadway theater? She's bringing a mongrel in there.
It's not like flying in America nowadays. It used to be unheard of that people bring a mutt on a plane. Now it's like four or five of the damn things. An emotional mongrel.
Steve, between the goat and the dog, I thought we were going to have it on over here before the play
did
started.
Did the dog freak out about the goat? Did it bark?
Dog stayed quiet.
Well, that's good.
Otherwise, I would have got that lady thrown out.
And the goat didn't have...
I would have thought twice about it.
The goat didn't have a deposit on stage?
No, and the goat left before the play actually started, but it was in the preview, so... You know, it just they wanted to show you what life on the island's like. Not Long Island, Steve. You can speak to Long Island.
I don't want to get all high society with you, Ira, but a theater in the round like that with a dog in there, that sounds like off-Broadway.
Well, the ticket price didn't reflect off-Broadway, I can tell you that.
Sounds like a playhouse in Hernando County, actually.
And as far as the opera's concerned, it's four acts. We lasted three. We ran like hell after the third. It was snowing outside. I said, hey, we got to get a cab before these 2,000 people get the hell out of here. My wife goes, wait a minute. The play's not in there. I go, she's going to die. There's no mystery about this. And it was my first opera, Steve. And I can tell all our listeners that have never been to the opera, one thing's for certain. No matter what the opera is, there's a woman in there. And when she ain't singing, she's coughing because she's got tuberculosis and she's going to croak. She's singing or she's croaking or she's coughing.
I never had... dreamt the cultured man that Ira is that he's never
Thank
seen
you,
an
Lee.
Opera
Thank
I've
you,
never
Lee.
thought but he liked what I told him what my dad used to say about opera It's Suffering Set the Music.
Suffering Set the Music.
Steve. I like that.
This was La Boheme at the famous Metropolitan Opera House.
Usually one of those singers is kind of built like Akeem Spence. So that's just kind of how it goes.
I showed up with my new sports jacket. All of a sudden, it's amazing what you get. Half the crowd's in tuxedos.
Really?
And half the crowd's in T-shirts. Well, what kind of New York crowd is this, Steven? You would have been on the T-shirt side, I know that. I had a tie, you know, a tie and a sports coat. And a wintry mix going on outside.
Did anybody have a Siamese cat with them?
No. I didn't see any Bucks sweatshirts, Lee, this theater.
All right,
but it's an experience.
Interesting, Ira. You just went on a theater excursion is what you did.
And the last one I was telling Lee before the podcast, A Bronx Tale, the musical, second row center. I mean, these guys were spitting on me. The guy that was playing Sonny the Mobster was spitting on me. And there's one scene where he's rolling the dice. It felt like the dice were coming right at me. Hell of a play. Anybody gets a chance. It was a good movie with De Niro playing the bus driver father. Fantastic show.
You're missing out the part that you told me.
Which one?
Right before. Well, there was a certain element of the show that you enjoyed.
Oh, well, you know, the girls from the neighborhood, Belmont Avenue in the Bronx, Steve, your old stomping grounds.
Wait a minute. Now you've got me in Long Island, the Bronx. Where am I?
Well, you're a nomad. You're wherever it is, you know, wherever you can find a job, that's where you are. And right now you're in beautiful Pinellas County. But it's good to be back, Lee.
No, you weren't specific. What did you see?
Oh, the beautiful girls of the Bronx in the 1960s in full 1960s garb, I might add. By that, I mean the tight skirts. You know, everything's bouncing. Everything's jumping up and down. And I tell you what, I had trouble watching the mobsters when the girls were on the stage.
Just like you remember it. When you got out of college, 1963, they're all dressed up like the girls in
63,
Batman.
Now take it easy, okay? You're 10 years before my time. And Lee just got back from Indy, Steve, so I'm sure he's got a couple of stories.
Any bouncing 60s women out there, Lee?
No, I didn't see Kay Adams either. So.
We go from bouncing women to Jason Light and Dirk Cutter. Boy, what a...
Ira, nobody delivers a theater review like you do. 5 Rieslings for Bronx Tale. Very nice, very nice. I wrote that down. I got to write my jokes
Steve,
down.
We got to give the Kemper credit because I think the first guy at the podium, the very first guy last week, who happened to meet Chucky, John Gruden. I don't know if there was anybody. Lee will tell me.
It might have been one or two before him, but yeah. He was early. He was one of the first ones.
So, you know, I'm watching this on NFL Network. And by the way, I tweeted this, and I'm going to say it again.
Yeah, he's irritated.
What the hell are you doing cutting away from Gruden? No, I think we mentioned that last week.
Yeah, you're still irritated.
There's Lee with the first question, Steve. Very first question.
Pounding Chucky.
Outstanding.
9:30 in the morning.
He's got a hell of an answer.
That was a beautiful one-liner.
Before Lee reminds us of the one-liner, tells us of the one-liner for those who missed it, Ira, your podcast is available on Podbean, Google Play, iTunes. Last I checked on Google Play last night, you were 11th. 11th. Crazy. In all subjects, all genres across the country. And everybody can subscribe. Leave a review, good, bad, indifferent, whatever.
Some of our listeners are questioning the numbers. They say we're looking at the wrong numbers. It's easy to be number 11. What do you mean? If it was easy to be 11, Lee, everybody'd be number 11. So what's your answer to this, Steve? Some people are...
Just go to Google Play.
They're throwing a little shade at us, Mr. Ismith.
Go to Google Play, look up podcasts, hit top charts, and you'll see the national top charts, and there's
self-explanatory.
Numbers don't lie, Mr. DeKemper.
I know that the conservatives are angry at Google, think they're trying to out them. So are you suggesting, Ira, that the Google folks are like trying to pump you up falsely?
I don't know. All of a sudden, I'm ahead of Stephanopoulos. I mean, the facts are the facts, Steve. I guess he better get some better guests over there, Steve.
Want to remind everybody, I know it troubled you that we didn't tell you in advance, but every Friday, now through the end of the Lightning season, the great Joe Bolts Fan podcast with Tom Lang. You know him from the Jeff Cameron Show on ESPN Tallahassee, the Scuttlebucks podcast. Tom is really fantastic with the Lightning. Got a lot of great feedback on that. I even sent it to somebody who knows the Lightning and said, hey, you know what? Do me a favor. Listen to the podcast and tell me what you think. And Tom is a great podcast. So you can find that and subscribe to that, too. Every Friday, it'll pop on Joe Bucks Fan in the morning. Joe Bolts Fan.
You jumped on a beautiful trend there because they got the best record in the league, Steve. This is a very good team that I think is the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. Your timing, gentlemen, on this podcast is very wise. Very wise.
I'll give him something to get fired up real quick about. I'm just checking right now, Ira. You are number 17 on Google Play. You're beating Barstool.
You said I was 11 over there at the Kemper.
Well, it varies depending on the hour of the day. Right now, you're number 17. You're beating Barstool Sports, which is huge. And you're also beating Nancy Grace.
My little Nancy Grace. She hasn't been the same since the O.J. Simpson trial ended, Steve. She's looking for another bandwagon to jump on.
Enough of that. As far as the Buccaneers, a lot going on, Ira. Of course, free agency's here. Fans are in full panic mode. A lot of tension, a lot of anxiety in the fan base. But Lee was up there at the combine, got to see a lot, and it was pretty funny. Lee, you hit up Chucky right there to say, ask him about the Bucs. You know, what's going on, pal? What actually happened?
Well, I had planned to ask him, like, when did he turn the page on the Bucs? Anybody that's an insider with Chucky, Ira being one of them, there's no question there was at least some sort of communication, at least a kicking of the tires. The way Mark Davis obviously was hounding Chucky, it was probably never going to be. So the press conference starts, and no one asked Chucky anything. There was like a 7-second pause, a 5-second pause. And I'm the kind of person, if there's a pause, and there's like, 120 reporters there, I better, strike while the iron's hot, So there was a pause, and I jumped in. I was to the very direct right of Chucky, right on the podium, to his right. I said, when did you turn the page on the Bucs? When did you decide, I'm not returning to the Bucs, I'm going to the Raiders? One of the best answers I've ever had. He looks right at me, and he gives me a scowl on his face, like, who let this SOB in? And he's like, when I was fired.
That's classic.
And so then my follow-up was, so are you telling me you had no negotiations with the Bucs whatsoever? You or your representative had no negotiations with the Bucs whatsoever about a possibility of returning as Bucs coach? He goes, nope, none.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
You buy it, Ira? You buying that?
Well, don't forget, I'm the guy that pointed out a month ago that when he took the podium to be introduced as Raider coach, one of the first things he said was, I never wanted to leave the Raiders. History tells us, by his own admission, his own words, that's not true. Because that famous night, Al Davis called Gruden and reached him and said, hey, you want to talk to the Glazers? And what was Gruden's answer? Absolutely. Well, that means you don't want to, never want to leave the Raiders. So you take it with a grain of salt, Lee. He probably didn't want to rub it into the Buck faces that, yeah, we talked, but it wasn't going to happen. I'm very happy to be with the Raiders. He didn't want to rub it in. Certainly you're not going to get anything from the Glazers in terms of any kind of deep talks with Gruden. But I still believe there was interest, at least from the Buck side, very much so.
So you think he was lying to protect the Glazers?
It wouldn't be the first time he fudged,
He likes
now, I'll say this. I've been told, and I do believe, the Glazers reached out for him after the Shiano fiasco, and he turned them down.
I've heard
So there could be a little bit of truth where he's still not over it. He's still not over it. He still doesn't trust this organization. And I understand that from his perspective, Steve, because he never thought he was going to get fired. And neither did Buck fans after that season. It wasn't like they fired him the day after the season ended, Lee. That came out of nowhere on a Friday night.
The Super Bowl, was it not?
Friday night, which is when the Glazers usually announce their ticket hikes on a Friday night.
Yeah, the email goes out at 11:30 p.m.
Right, dead news cycle.
There you go.
I got another Chucky story for you. Two nights later, killing time, went to Yard House Bar. It's a big old sports bar, upscale sports bar, block away from my hotel, smack dab in the middle of Indianapolis. Downtown, and I'm just sitting there by myself at a table, just trying to watch some basketball, just killing time, nursing a beer. Who comes walking in? Chucky. He walks right past my table, and we made eye contact, and I said, hey, Coach, I didn't mean to embarrass you a couple days ago. I wasn't trying to embarrass you. I was just looking for information. And at first, he looked at me like, who the hell is this? And then he recognized me, and a big old smile broke out in his face. And right about that time, some 40-year-old dude built like me, fanboy from Indianapolis, it's Coach Gruden, and he tried to hug him, and it was really embarrassing. And of course, at that point, Chuck was like, get out of here. He tried to.
And when you looked a little closer, it was Brenson Buckner.
Well, there was a Buckner story too. But anyway, Chucky tried to, escape the guy and go with his entourage. And at that point, I just said, Coach, good luck in Oakland. The NFL's good if the Raiders win. And big old smile came out on his face. He reached over, shook my hand. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate this guy. He almost did a wrestling move, almost did a bear hug on the guy.
It's kind of like when you go to Panera in Newport Richie, Ira. They just squeeze you and the ladies come out and got people everywhere all over you. And do we think that the guy that tried to hug Chucky was that Tom Jones?
He wasn't.
This guy jumped right in, like, meet a Steve away as Chucky, 4 feet, guy jumps right in the middle of us and tried to hug. It's Coach Gruden.
Hey, Steve, speaking of Buck fans, it's now out on the table, right? We know what's going on in terms of that draft party, and we know who's going to be there. We expect a big turnout.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. People have seen it. But, Ira, let's get right to the Bucks angst of the day, because it's always angst around Tampa Bay right now.
It's March 6th. You got angst on your mind?
So let's get it right to your sage wisdom. The word came out. Obviously, everybody knows that there's a pending trade that's been done. They're just waiting for the league year to start. The Miami Dolphins have acquired Robert Quinn from the Rams, former defensive player of the year, a guy you probably voted for once for all pro, or maybe twice.
What do you have, 19 sacks that year?
Yeah, he was dominant, and 8.5 sacks last year. Got a little better as he adjusted to
Wade. He's had some injury issues, Steve. Has.
Got a little better as he adjusted to Wade Phillips' defense, finished strong, 27 years old only. And he goes to the Dolphins for a fourth-round pick and a swap of six-round picks. And the Buccaneers, we learn from reports, we don't know for sure, but there are reports out there that say Jason Light offered a fourth-round pick, so which means the Bucs wanted Robert Quinn and thought, this guy fits into our system. We want him. Here's an offer. And now he's on the Dolphins. What do you make of this whole mess?
Steve, he's a right end, you know, superior pass-rushing skills, who's only 27. Of course the Bucs were interested in him, Lee.
I hope so.
Of course they were interested in him. Now, they didn't get him. Does that mean that the weight of the world has to come down on Jason Light? We don't know the inner workings of the negotiations. If Light wasn't interested in Quinn, then we pummel. Then we pummel the Buck organization. But he was, and he couldn't finish the deal. Ultimately, we don't know exactly what the Bucks offered. And ultimately, Lee, like so many things, the Bucks didn't have control. The Bucks didn't have control. The Rams did. And if Quinn was going to be a Buck this fall, the whole draft and free agency picture would be looking a lot different right now.
Of course.
Lot different.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't mean they don't need more defensive linemen, even with Robert Quinn. Doesn't mean that.
It's true.
You know, because they're hurting the tackle also.
They're hurting, period.
But the Bucks were interested in Robert Quinn, and I don't think Jason Light could look at us with a straight face and deny that, but it didn't happen.
I know Bucks. A lot of Bucks fans are just completely irate that Light didn't get him, and of course, Light's never going to come out and say, as you said, what the inner workings of the transaction or proposed transaction. But as Mike Florio is famous for saying, silence invites speculation, it invites skepticism, and so without knowing, people are jumping to conclusions, assuming, he's writing things down. Look out.
they're going to assume Light didn't make a legitimate shot at it.
Yeah, now Steve is of the mind, and I don't disagree with Steve. I would have given up a third-round pick for Quinn. I would have given up a third-round pick for Quinn. The Bucks are in no bargaining position to get a defensive end. None. They got to buy high. They don't have any choice. This is what happens when you paint yourself in a corner and cannot develop a freaking tight end.
And the same is true with cornerback, my friend. The Bucks don't have the leverage.
Leverage is the perfect word. That's the perfect word. That's why I love your vocabulary, Ira. That's the perfect word. That's why Grimes has him over a barrel. And that's why any cornerback has him over a barrel. And, oh, by the way, you know, what decent free agent wants to come to a losing organization, Cleveland South? And I'm sorry, Bucks, until you start winning the home games, until you start making a playoff push, you're Cleveland South. You're Cleveland South. That's just the way it is. Don't like it, don't get mad at me. Look in the mirror. You guys have the ability to change. I don't. Steve doesn't. You don't. They do. So, you know, no free agent is going to want to come to a losing organization unless they're overpaid. That's the corner the Bucks have painted themselves into. They have no choice. It's either overpay, like Dominic. Dominic, you could argue he overpaid for Vincent Jackson. He really overpaid for that scumbag Eric Wright. There's other. They had no choice. They were a lousy organization. And that's just the way it is. So,
Lee's making a hell of a point here. This is an overarching issue as we go into free agency. Is everything has changed where the Bucks were once an enticing destination in their glory days for free agents, Sapp and Brooks and Rondé all going out and pitching to free agents. Hey, we got a hell of a team. You can put us over the top. And here we are 15 years later, Steve, and maybe the Bucks do have to overpay because I read your story about the state income tax and all the financials, but Steve, sometimes there's more factors than just financials here in terms of landing a free agent that is being pursued by a lot of other teams.
Well, sure, sure. There's no crime in overpaying. Okay, I don't care. It's not
production.
My money.
It's over, about production.
Overpay five guys by $2 million. So you blew an extra $10 million and you got five good players. I don't care.
It's,
you
know, production.
It's about production. But, Ira, you're letting a light off the hook, I think, a little bit on this trade deal. The guy, do you believe that he made an offer?
Yes.
Well, then that means he wanted the player.
Yes.
And somebody else got him. So I believe that. And I asked somebody who in the know about this. I said, do teams talk to other teams without any intent of trading to that team? And I was told that that's a no-no in the league. If the Rams really had no plan to trade him in the NFC, they're not going to jerk Jason Light around by entertaining deals and talking to him. They'll put it out there, hey, we're not. It's not our first choice in the NFC.
Or even waste their time.
Right. Or they might let Light know up front, hey, it's not our first choice NFC. But for him to, if he made an offer, that means it was out there for the taking. So, and I believe that to a bit. I mean, there's a code of conduct, you know. But if he wanted him, which he did, why didn't he get him? What are the Glazers? Brian Glazer knocks on his door and says, Jason, why didn't we get Robert Quinn? What is the answer?
Well, I got to speak from bitter personal experience here. I go back 10 years.
I thought you were going to talk about Muriel Berkowitz.
No. My big gaffe, if you want to call it a gaffe, the Brett Favre coming to Tampa story. I thought I had it nailed. So did the Bucks. Nailed down. He's coming. He talked to Gruden. Gruden talked to his wife. Everybody's on board. Favre wants Tampa. Well, Tampa didn't get him. They didn't get him. Were the Bucks interested? Yeah. Did they make an offer? Yeah. They didn't get him. Why? They weren't in control of the situation. So, guys, let's not try to assume we know more than what's going on. The Rams Brain Trust made a call. Now, I said to you, Lee, if the Bucks made the better offer, I think it's incumbent on the Rams organization to their fans and their players to take the best offer.
That's a fair point that no one's brought up. You know, how are you going to answer Rams fans? Like, we turned down a better offer from the Bucks.
So we don't know the details, but, you know, Steve's making a good point. Yeah, the Bucks were interested. Yeah, the Bucks wanted Quinn, and they didn't get him. And when Brian and Joel Glazer say to Light, why didn't you get him? Light's answer is going to be, we didn't control it. The Rams did what they wanted at the end of the day. Lee, is that a good enough answer?
Well, do you think there's a hole in the drywall underneath Ed Glazer's desk?
or we don't even know what happened. Let's be straight with that. We're just going by reports. Maybe Light did offer a third rounder, or maybe he didn't, and he tells the Glazers, hey, I offered a third round. They didn't want to trade him.
If he did.
Yeah, you know, who knows?
If he did, if he did, he should let that out there.
You would think.
Yeah. It's like, hey, man, I offered a hell of a lot more, and he turned it down. What do you want me to do?
Steve, right. Bottom line, if Quinn was coming to the Bucks, their approach to free agency and the draft would be a lot less desperate. Than it appears to be.
Well, there's still time. There's still time. So that brings us to some of the other names that are out there, Iris. So first let me stick with a quick hitter on Miami, right? Because Miami gets in Robert Quinn. So, of course, just like after the draft, your first question is, oh, they drafted this guy. Who do they have to get rid of? Right? Usually that's how it goes in the draft afterwards for at least some teams. So the Dolphins, highest paid D-line entering last year, they underperformed. Highest paid in the league. And those guys are still around.
They didn't get a lot of sacks.
Yeah, 30 sacks. They trade for Quinn. Cameron Wake, there's speculation out of South Florida that they might wave goodbye. Guys had double-digit sacks the last 2 years. He's a different version of Julius Peppers in a lot of ways as far as his longevity and freakishness and longtime captain.
He's averaged 10 sacks a year for his career.
Yeah, like, work ethic guy, produces, and he played, I looked it up, 58% of the snaps last year. So that makes him already in a rotational mindset.
Now he's old.
Yeah, he's 36 years old, 10 and a half sacks. So if he falls off, or do you try to trade for this guy?
I think it makes sense that Wake gets cut loose by the Dolphins at this point. I wouldn't blame Miami.
You want him in Tampa, Ira?
Yeah. I'm not giving him $12 million at the age of 36. But, I want him in Tampa. I think he can still do it.
It's become a pet peeve of mine the last few weeks. Out on Twitter, you talk about Peppers. You talk about Michael Bennett. First thing they scream about is age. Who cares? Production, people. Production. We're not talking about 2022. We're talking about 2018. I'll lay money right now. Unless the Bucks make a deep run in the playoffs, Cutter and Light aren't going to be around here in 4 years. I'll make that bet right now. Unless they make a deep run in the playoffs. Forget 2022, 2018, because they don't win this year, Ira. It's a good bet there's a new administration and a new coaching staff. They got to win now. Now. Not 4 years from now.
You get 2 years out of Cameron Wake, 2 good years, nobody's going to be questioning that deal 5 years from now.
I don't give a damn how old the guy is. Production, people, production.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, you know, you may maybe if they're planning to cut him, maybe you could throw a seventh-round pick out there, trade for him. I think he still has 2 years left at like $8.5-9 million. There's ways to get these guys. Now that brings us to Michael Bennett. Now, people have their issues with Bennett and all sorts of stuff out there with Bennett, but the guy was also productive last year, older guy.
Good
and,
against the run.
You know, versatile talent, inside, outside, versatile, whatever. McCoy likes him. He obviously, I think if he came here, he'd feel a bit of a commitment to effort with McCoy there, and I know their wives are tight friends, and I talked to McCoy about him at the Pro Bowl and all that. We've learned that Atlanta is interested in Bennett. Now, they know him.
I could just see DeKemper's stomach turning.
If Atlanta gets him, so Dan, I am going to be berserk.
Dan Quinn spent 2 years with the guy, and their new defensive coordinator, spent time with him. So they know him, and they want him, and we want him chasing Jameis.
And you got Beasley on the other side. That can be very formidable.
If the Bucs let Bennett get to Atlanta, that just tells me they don't give a damn about the rush.
So what do you think, Ira?
Well,
who do you want? You want Bennett? You want Cameron Wake? You want somebody else out there? What do you want? You want Peppers?
I'm a Buck fan. I can't even fathom the idea of Bennett in a Falcon uniform. I can't fathom it. Don't forget, Beasley was roughed up last year. The year before, the guy was a monster. Mm-hmm. The guy was a terror. He had 14, 15 sacks.
And last year, he was a marked man.
And he got beat up a little bit. But when healthy, he's very, very strong coming off that edge. And you mentioned the difference between Bennett and Wake, which could be substantial in the Buckeyes, is his versatility. Wake's not going to play defensive tackle.
True.
You know, Bennett slides in, and he's very effective mm-hmm. from inside. Mm-hmm. The problem with Bennett, and you guys tell me whether it's overblown, he's a loose cannon. He's an absolute loose cannon. You may not care about that. You may be all about production, but this is Tampa.
I understand.
He's involved with the standing of the national anthem.
I understand.
He said he got beat up in Vegas by the cops.
Which is
the story doesn't seem like it's holding up.
Yes.
We're never going to hear about that anymore. He's not pushing it anymore because the cops have pushed back on Bennett and said mm-hmm. that's preposterous. He's a loose cannon. He speaks his mind. Mm-hmm. How will that go over in a military town like Tampa? Are you worried about that, or is it all about production, Mr. DeKemper?
It's all about wins, actually. And I'll give you one, and no one gets more hacked off about this kneeling crap than me. But if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. The NFL claims they can't do anything about it, which is a crock. But you know what? Wins. Wins. I don't give a damn about the guy's politics. He's not running for office.
That's why Al Davis wins. Loves you, DeKemper.
Well, here's the thing. When Mike Evans did his kneeling last year, when the Bucs were in the playoff run in December, who was talking about it? Nobody. Nobody. Kansas City, one of the most conservative towns in America, went bananas about Marcus Peters and, well, he didn't kneel, he just sat. When they traded Peters, the town went bananas. The same guy they couldn't stand for not standing for the national anthem, they went wild because they traded Peters for it looked like they gave him away.
It's all too, about wins. They didn't get value for Peters. I don't know what the hell they're doing.
The reason why, because he's a knucklehead. I mean, think about this. Chris Ballard and Cleveland's GM, Dorsey, were with Kansas City when he was drafted. They didn't want him better than anybody. They were with Kansas City a little bit over a year ago. They wanted nothing to do with him, per Peter King's story. Wanted nothing to do with him in the trade. Kansas City called up, offered him, like, no thanks, sorry.
Well, Lee, in that regard, to Steve's point, it's rather ominous from a Bucs standpoint that Dan Quinn, who knows Bennett as well
Thank
as anybody,
you. Yes.
wants this man in a Falcon uniform.
That should tell you all you need
that
to know.
That is ominous, Steve, and you got to think that Bennett and Quinn have a great relationship, mm-hmm. and that could tilt, if the Bucs are equally interested in Bennett, that could tilt the whole equation towards the Falcons.
Well, yeah, Steve sort of brought up this point, or he kind of alluded to it. I don't ever, ever, ever remember anyone suggesting Bennett did not give his all on the field. I don't ever. It could have happened. I don't ever remember. So talking about effort, I don't think that's an issue with Bennett.
I'm not sure he's the player he was 4 years ago.
No, but he's better than Will Golston.
Boy, that's a mantra of yours. Better than Will Golston.
I understand Will Golston's not known as a pass rusher, and he had zero sacks last year. But does he remind you of a Dick Butkus of the defensive ends? You know, they talk about he's a great run stuffer. Is he that damn good?
Steve, Golston has not replaced Doug Martin in the Kemper pantheon of people whose name must be in every podcast. Well, podcast.
Hey, Golston has a role on this team, just not the role it's been. You know, there's no reason you can't have both.
$6.5 million for what?
Golston and Bennett.
He's a pretty good run stuffer.
Is he that good though?
You would think.
I'm not saying he's bad, but come on. I mean,
Steve, you would think.
Ira, you talk to more NFL people around the country than I do. Have you ever heard anyone mention Golston as one of the better run stuffers in the league? What? I've never heard that.
Steve, if he's not, he doesn't belong on the Bucs.
You're making my point.
Well, he had an off year last year. I mean,
he didn't have a good year.
And he's a good guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about – he's a good guy. He had a scary injury, that neck injury, and he went right back to playing, you know, a game or two later. And the way he – and anybody knows his history, it's a heartwarming story. He came up from nothing. And I'm being polite when I say nothing. Living in cars, being bounced from house to house because he really didn't have a family. And he winds up going to college. I think he got his degree. It's a wonderful story. Production. That's what it's about.
Steve, when he's playing well, Golston has a knack for knifing through on run plays and dropping guys for losses. We didn't see that much last year.
Well, last year he had an off year. If you listen to Dave Moore, who really calls it straight, the ex-Buck on the radio network, he's often called, and even in his interviews, not last year but the year before, called Golston probably, from the film he watches, the best run-stuffing defensive end in the NFL. That he's basically so big and so unblockable by tight ends, and that's what the position that Moore is honed in on, and Golston's at 285, that he's just, in his mind, was unblockable. But that wasn't the case last year. So Golston, who's a one-dimensional player, his one dimension was off. So that's not a good combination. Now, hopefully it's not because he got paid. And he did have that weird neck injury in the middle of the season, but he swore he couldn't.
At New Orleans, wasn't it?
I think so. Like halfway
he might
through.
Not want to play at New Orleans again. Because the year before he got hurt at New Orleans.
But he came back, so, I understand not
getting. He's so good, the Bucs have one of the worst defenses in the league. Come on.
Yeah. He's got a lot to prove.
But the run defense was off last year, period. So, I was wondering, have you heard any rumors of anyone looking to trade for Robert Ayers? Have you heard about that at all?
Steve, I understand the point you're making because you asked a few podcasts ago, Lee, it might have been you that brought up this point. Where's the interest in the Bucs' potential free agent?
Well, that's Steve's very valid point.
Well, other than Grimes, maybe. Other than Grimes.
Yeah, other than Grimes, you don't hear anything.
Grimes is going to get paid. If he wants to play, he's going to get paid.
Well, now that set off a bit of a firestorm yesterday, Ira. I don't know if you caught all
this. How so, Mr. Isbitz?
Did you catch all the Maurice Jones-Drew stuff?
I didn't catch it, but I read Joe Bucs fan, and you guys have typed it up, and plus you have a response to
yes.
MJD.
So here's the deal, in short, for anyone who didn't see it. Maurice Jones-Drew works for NFL Network. He's at the Combine, played for Dirk Cutter for 5 years in Jacksonville. I've seen them hugging up in Jacksonville. In Tampa, they're
is it the
tight.
Same kind of hug that Cutter gives the Kemper? The same,
similar,
the same passion.
I mean, it is on the record that Cutter in the locker room invited Lee into his office for a beer this season. Where that
is
I witnessed
that
with my
own
eyes.
Loss,
it was obviously a win.
It was a win.
Yeah, obviously a victory. Yeah, Lee, hey, come on. Anyway.
Let's have a beer over a loss.
He's got Riesling in his office. Where's my invitation?
I don't think he's got Riesling in his office. Right. Anyway, so Maurice Jones-Drew.
By the way, I had two Rieslings on my New York trip and a beet salad to die for at a French restaurant.
What'd you pay for the beet salad?
$14 New York prices.
That's pretty good deal.
$14, my friend. Small.
I was thinking like 30 or something, man.
Beets, and I got a picture of it. So you'll be posting it.
Nice.
I took it just for you.
How did it compare to the Atlanta Airport beet salad?
I think the Atlanta Airport had it beat.
had it beat.
Yeah.
All right. So Maurice Jones-Drew is doing a mock draft just for the top 10 at the Combine. He takes his top 10 and marries it up to the top 10 picking teams. And he sort of, you know, gives an explanation for each one. But it's just the top 10. And he gets to the Bucs, and he says, this is where it gets interesting. I've talked to a lot of people, not a lot of consensus on what the Bucs are going to do. But they're done with Brent Grimes, and I think they go with the cornerback out of Ohio State, and that's the pick.
Who's off the board at that point, Steve? Do you remember if Barkley and Nelson and Chubb are off the board.
Nelson was not in Maurice Jones-Drew's top 10.
Okay.
Oh, so, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
So, anyway.
That tells me he shouldn't have his job. But may continue.
Hey, let's be fair. There's always a guy who drops. O.J. Howard was a consensus top 10 pick last year.
Well, I agree with Mayock. Nelson's one of the two or three best players in this draft. Skip him at your own peril, gentlemen. Well, but anyway, go ahead. Right. So he's got the Bucks taking Ohio State corner.
Right. But he says that they're done with Brent Grimes. So I'm thinking, hey, he's tight with Cutter.
Did he say done with Grimes or yes. Grimes done
no.
with the Bucks?
Quote unquote. Yeah, quote unquote. That's what he said.
Yeah. I thought you were going to read the quote. The Bucks are done with Grimes. So I write it up. And about 8 minutes after it publishes, Mikal Grimes says, calm down, Joe, calm down. And she responds saying that, that's not the conversation we've had. And
she's aware of Joe Bucks fan within 8 minutes.
She says that's not coming from our camp. So maybe it looks like the Glazers don't want to pone up the money for Brent Grimes. Maybe the Bucks aren't as serious as we think they might be.
Did she also suggest, Lee, that there's been no talk between the Bucks and Grimes?
No, she did not say that.
She didn't say that. All right.
And Light, when I Light had his sidebar, not to use journalism lingo here, but when he had a little private chat with
the
beat writers, away from the podium last week, he told me that, quote unquote, recently he's been speaking. There's open communication. There's ongoing negotiations.
They could stop Grimes from reaching free agency.
If they wanted to, they could
make a pitch for it.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so the exact quote from Jones-Drew was, I think with Brent Grimes leaving, you have Vernon Hargraves kind of struggling. They're going to solidify that corner position. So that's how he phrased it. And then Miko responds, Ira, exactly, just so we have it straight so you can give your take here. She flat out says that, here, I got it right here. Relax, Joe. MJD, which is Maurice Jones-Drew, and Brent Grimes are good friends, but this take isn't coming from our camp. They haven't spoken this offseason, meaning the Bucks and Grimes, or Grimes and MJD, we don't know. So maybe the Bucks don't really want Grimes like they say they do. Scared money don't make no money, says Miko. So that implies that Grimes wants to play. He's looking for cash, and the Bucks haven't put up the money. What do you have to say about that?
It kind of suggests that Jones-Drew is getting it from Dirk Cutter. That's what it suggests. That it's coming from the Buck perspective. We're moving on. That's what it seems to be. He didn't say he's getting it from Grimes. We don't know about any relationship between Grimes and Jones-Drew.
Well, apparently there is a relationship from what Miko says. But
I would be surprised if the Bucks had no interest in retaining
Grimes'
services. How can they not?
Yeah. Well, why isn't it done? There's a number out there. Do it.
Well, first of all, if Grimes has a chance to test free agency, that's very enticing, Lee. He doesn't know what the offer is.
Yeah,
in
other words, show me the money so I don't have to test free agency. I get that.
Which means overpay, in a sense.
Well, we just spoke about that, why the Bucks have zero leverage.
Steve, you could have five teams chasing Brent Grimes. So in that respect, why should he sign with the Bucks on March 8th?
I got to be honest with you. It's what, March 4th, March 5th, March 6th?
March 6th.
Looking grim for the Bucks. I mean, a lot can change, but
gosh. Take it easy there, Lee. Take it easy. Don't put on those dark shades. They got holes to fill, and they got time to fill them, and they got money to fill them. Let's see what the brain trust comes up with, but they're going to have to get busy in a hurry, Steve.
Yeah, do you think they're prepared, Ira? Here's really the money question. Do you think they're prepared to let Brent Grimes play on another team next year?
It could be on a team in the division. I mean, it really could be. I mean, Carolina needs corners too, and I just think Grimes.
You don't think Sean Payton wouldn't love to have Brent Grimes?
You know, he's still a quality player.
Do you think
he is a quality player?
Are the Bucks prepared to let him play somewhere else next year?
They shouldn't be. They shouldn't be.
They shouldn't be. But they should have gotten Robert Quinn. They should have addressed defensive end last year.
Steve,
they should have addressed running back last year.
This Grimes scenario. Tell me where I'm wrong, guys, because I'm not.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I said, they should have addressed running back last year. Should have addressed defensive end last year. Should have done a lot of things to Bucks. They didn't. So when you say they should get Grimes, yeah, and I should come home to Kate Upton too.
I'm not going there, Red DeKeffer. My powers of imagination don't extend that far. Now, Steve, I'm going to make this point, and you're going to agree with it, and you can write everything you want on that little pad of yours, Isbits. But the fact is that this whole Grimes scenario and the fact that the Bucks don't have any leverage in this situation boils down to one fact. Vernon Hargraves hasn't gotten it done. And if he had, Lee, he'd be going into his third year as a solid outside corner.
Yes.
Who can take on other teams as number ones. And then it doesn't mean you don't need corners, but you're not desperate because you have Hargraves. Now you don't know what you got in Hargraves, and Grimes has him over a barrel, so to speak, unless you can get maybe Trumaine Johnson. I think you bring Grimes back even if you get Trumaine Johnson.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I am adamant.
I don't trust Hargraves on the outside right now.
Well, I don't trust Mike Smith's defense or his assistants to develop any rookie corner. None. Zero. So to me, spending a draft pick right now, until proven otherwise, spending a draft pick on a cornerback is throwing away a pick you could use to trade for Wake or for Michael Bennett or for a defensive end. Until the Bucks defensive staff can prove to me they could develop a cornerback, you do not draft a cornerback.
But you better get some.
You better get one, meaning free agency. You know, Grimes did quite well with Mike Smith's defense. Robert McClain, veteran, did quite well. There's another guy that they ought to bring back. You know, good versatile guy. You know, he might just get paid. Ryan Smith, they don't know what they don't have to do with him. They can't figure out what position. Obviously, Hargraves fell off the map. Another guy, a rookie they drafted.
Steve,
I don't trust him.
Steve, are we overrating Grimes' skills at this point at his age? Are we overrating him? Are we overranking him?
It's a very simple formula. He's been a good football player for 2 years here. 2 years he was better than last year, but he was still
pretty
solid.
Durable.
Solid last year, relatively durable, wants to be here. From everything Lee and I know.
Good in the locker room.
There you go. This team is in no position to let good football players walk away.
Thank you.
So it's a no-brainer. And like I said 20 minutes ago, I don't really care if they overpay him by $2 million. Really don't care. It's not going to mess him up. He's not some long-term five-year deal contract. And, you know, Lee wrote something about this morning about people freaking out about salary cap room and, oh, no, we got to save money for this guy. I've been saying it forever. It doesn't make any sense. Worry about it when you get there. You know, what are the odds of the Bucks having so many good players that they have to get rid of one? Ooh, gasp. You know, meanwhile, we find out today officially salary cap's up $8.5 million.
Lee, the most distressing, now maybe I'm reading this wrong. Maybe I am. But to me, the most distressing aspect of this report by MJD, which is only a report.
Sure.
It's only a report.
And mind you, not by a journalist.
But and that's right. And a guy who's probably trying to make a name for himself so he can move up.
And
the
I
ranks.
Have nothing against MJD. He seemed like a really likable
guy.
I
don't think he's that plays that card, Ira.
But, Lee, my aspect is, to me, the implication is that he's getting it from the Bucks' point of view rather than Grimes' point of view.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's what Miko just backed it up. Don't speak for Grimes. She's basically saying, don't speak for my husband because you haven't talked to him. She said that.
Yeah.
And so if Jones-Drew is getting this from the Buck point of view and suggesting he's moving on, he's not coming back to the Bucks, I think Buck fans have every right to say, What's going on here,
well,
Steven?
Real quick about the salary cap story I wrote, and I for people who didn't read it, I'll just mention this. I spoke with an NFL suit, not with the Bucks, last week in Indianapolis, and he told me.
You like that NFL suit. You like that phrase. That's beautiful.
Yeah, because
they don't all wear suits, Lee.
I know.
Not all of them.
Not even Light wears a suit, come to think of it.
There you go.
He's always been sweats. At any rate, this guy told me, he's like, your first priority, you get players. You can always manage the cap. He told me the salary cap is easier to manage than it is getting good players. You get good players first.
Didn't you boys just write, I don't know who wrote it, raise your hand, but somebody wrote, hey, Buck fans, stop worrying about spending too much money.
Yeah, me.
Yeah, good
yeah,
job.
Yeah, so we just mentioned. Yeah. All right, two quick ones. Very quick, Ira. Dontari Poe, your old pal from the Chiefs, played well in Atlanta last year. Supposedly he's got a lot of suitors and going to have a lot of interest on the market. From the Jason Light perspective, you often talk about the Buck perspective. You know, bad Ira imitation there.
But Gruden does a better one than you.
From the No, he doesn't. So from the Buck perspective, this is a group, Jason Light, he ran out last year and said, I need a defensive tackle. And he picked Swaggy Baker as his best bet. Okay, and that was horrible. So one can assume that he still believes they have a big hole at defensive tackle. So do you think, from that perspective, that Poe is a guy that they will chase before they even go after a defensive end?
No, I do not, Lee. I'm not on the Poe bandwagon. I'm not convinced he's a keeper. You know, he had one decent year with the Chiefs. They let him go. Now, here the Falcons don't want to keep this guy? I mean, are the Falcons so rich at defensive tackle? I'm not a Poe guy. When it comes to defensive tackle, considering McCoy's age, mm-hmm. not his production, mm-hmm. but his age, they got to start thinking about the next guy.
Absolutely.
At defensive tackle. I would not chase Poe. He's not high on my list. He's a big body.
He's a big body, and the Bucks need defensive
tackle.
And
Mike Smith likes big bodies, we think, at defensive tackle.
Here's the thing, and I hate to go war on people, war meaning that completely BS baseball stat, but is it a coincidence or is it meaningful that wherever Poe plays, they win?
I think it's coincidence. The Falcons didn't win because of their defense.
Well, they did, but they didn't lose because of their defense.
Chiefs let him go in his prime. Let him hit free agency. Steve, I'm moving on from Poe. I think they can do better.
Well, here's one. I just thought of this. Who drafted Poe?
Maybe your boy Pioli.
Scott Pioli. All right. Who signed him in Atlanta? Scott Pioli.
And who just let him go in Atlanta?
Well, maybe there's
he's not gone yet. He's not gone yet.
And it could be a salary cap issue as well. We don't know that. But if Pioli likes the guy, I'm leaning toward
Pioli.
Well,
I'm a Chiefs fan, and every time I watched the Chiefs 2 years ago, Poe was getting pushed around. So I say they can do better. Move on.
I got you. All right, last one, Ira, for this podcast. Last one, Sage. Very interesting stuff coming out of the Sports Day Tampa Bay podcast. Todd Monken joined the Tampa Bay Times effort there, and he was chatting from Indianapolis. And he said that he was asked about his duties as now full-time offensive coordinator versus part-time guy and leading with the wide receivers. He goes out there and he says that one of his duties, let me get the quote right here. Oh, he says, Cutter told him, you know, maybe it would be good after 3 years that Jameis has a fresh voice. And Monken said that, you know, good chance, although it's not baked yet, good chance that a lot of what I'll be doing is, you know, really getting in, boring in on Jameis and delivering the message to him in a different way. That really rubbed me the wrong way, Ira. I'm not sure why, after 3 years, Jameis needs a new voice when Cutter's here because of his relationship with Jameis. And if you need a new voice, then why don't you get a new QB coach?
Bingo.
So what do you make of that?
Seems a little odd. I thought part of the reason that Monken was getting elevated, Lee, was to relieve Cutter of some of his duties, that Cutter can spend more time with Winston, not less time with Winston. I don't even understand that. And Steve just hit it at the end there, Lee. If Jameis needs a new voice, what's that say about Mike Bajakian? See, that's not a ringing endorsement.
I've never been a big, I can separate personal from professional. I've never been impressed, and there's nothing in Bajakian's resume that says, wow, this guy's a quarterback guru. Nothing at all. You know, we talked about this previously, you know, weeks past, months past, that, you know, Jameis will have something pop up that he's got to rectify. And he rectifies it, then another thing pops up. It's either interceptions, or it's fumbles, or it's this, or it's that. I'm just not, show me. But Bajakian hasn't shown me yet that he's this NFL, this trusted NFL guy who could develop quarterbacks. I'm sorry his name escapes me. He went to Central Michigan, played at Bennett Academy in high school in suburban Chicago, in Naperville, to be precise. Lyle, to be precise. Can't remember his name. He had a cup of coffee with the Bucks. Nothing quarterback. When that's the best quarterback he developed, I got questions.
You know, Steve, I'll put this out there. I don't think it's crazy to suggest that at least part of the reason for the Monken decision to remove him as a position coach and give him enhanced powers, I'm not sure the Glazers aren't involved in that. And by that I mean when the season ends, they look back and say, you know, Jameis played pretty well at the end, but overall for the season, he didn't take that step up in year three that we thought he would. Part of it could be the injury, but overall he did not. Certainly he didn't connect with DeSean Jackson. No chemistry, no nothing. That's got to be rectified. We need Winston to take the next step up, or we're not going anywhere as a franchise. And that might have put some wheels in motion. Hey, we got to make some changes. And here comes Monken. But I still go back to one thing. Cutter needs to spend more time with Winston, not less.
Yeah, the new voice thing is interesting. We'll see. You know, again, Monken said it, that's the whole plan for him isn't necessarily planned out yet. But it's odd. You know, look, Jameis has been giving the ball away. Like, you give away opinions, Ira, just throwing them out all over town. He's handing them out. He's got to find a way to stop that.
Like hefty tips.
Exactly. All right, Sage. You are back on Bright House, Spectrum Sports Network.
Later this week, probably Thursday.
Probably Thursday. We'll look for you on Spectrum Sports 360, 1030 on Bay News 9.
Probably be on Rock Riley this week. You never know.
Probably coming up.
You said you were going to mention something about the draft party.
Yeah, draft party. You know, it's early, but it's going to be the first two nights of the draft. Day one, day two, South Tampa, Buffalo Wild Wings, Bucks Uncensored Chief, the commish, our good friend, is quite a ringleader at these events. Nobody, except for Lee, maybe. Right, Lee rivals him. Nobody's got a bigger voice than the commish.
No.
And Lee,
Lou.
Commish starts up an extra foot or so he's got more projection just from height alone.
And you're projecting an even bigger turnout, Steven.
It's going to be crazy, and yeah, there's no reason why it wouldn't be. And actually, fans can actually attend if they want to. They want to come to the draft party and take an Uber over to the stadium or vice versa if they want to do with both.
They can get a haircut.
Easy.
Fuck haircut, Steve.
We'll see. Our friends at Headlines may be out there.
And you know, Lee, last year it was crazy and the Bucks had the 19th pick. This year they got the 7th pick. It should be even more. Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll be
more drama.
No, less drama because less alcohol consumed.
Oh, less alcohol.
You need that time.
No, but they'll all be toasting the Bucks pick afterwards, Lee.
Well, you don't know.
And I think it should be Quentin Nelson.
Well, I'm going to give you some insight. I know you want to end the podcast, but a couple quick stories here. You want insight from the combine? I'll give you insight. The first one, I got to admit, a faux pas. I made an embarrassing mistake. I know a couple people caught this. I don't know if they watched a video on YouTube or whatever of Marcus Davenport being interviewed. And I goofed up. I asked him. And
don't,
I know.
Don't tell me you asked the first question again like Chuck.
No. All right. But I know full well where Marcus Davenport went to college, San Antonio. And for whatever reason, when I was asking him a question, something about what gets you motivated, you know, you went to a small school, you hear everybody saying, well, he didn't play Power 5 conference. You know, does that irritate you? Does that motivate you? And instead of saying University of Texas, San Antonio, I accidentally said UTEP. And he turns to me and goes, well, what really gets me motivated when people say I went to UTEP?
simple mistake.
Well, I'm confessing I made the goof. I goofed up. So, and there's two people that Twittered Steve and I, like, oh, it's got to be Joe. I recognize that voice. It was me. So
that,
I admit
that shows
to it.
How sharp our listeners and our readers are, Steve. They pick right up on that.
Yeah, there's a guy by the name of Maccabee. He doesn't follow us anymore, but hardcore intelligent Bucks fan.
Ooh.
He caught it, and I'm fessing up to it. But here's the insight. Here's the insight. You bring up this Quentin Nelson character and the Bucks.
Oh, he ain't a character. He's a stud. He ain't a character.
When I see him block against grown men instead of children, then I'll believe it.
All right.
I don't care who it is.
But you're coming around to him. You're coming around.
No, not necessarily. But I'll tell you my impression. When Dirk Cutter had his little sidebar off the podium, private chat session with the Bucks beat guys, I asked him about Panfield. My specific question, and you guys heard the audio, but obviously our listeners have not. And because it's technically that's not for public consumption, the audio. At any rate, I asked him, you know, Dirk, last year, midway through the season, you stated that Kevin Panfield, at that point, graded out as your best offensive lineman. Where does he stand right now? How did he grade out last year? The body language on Cutter was, I mean, looked like someone told him someone ran over his dog. His, you know, facially he was frowning, and he was almost physically biting his lip. He was frowning. He was grimacing. And he's like, well, you're right. Panfield was the highest graded offensive lineman last year. He said last year, not midpoint, last year. It's like, whoa, that got my attention. And he basically said, look, he had every chance in the world to win the starting job. He was in a rotation. The reason why there's rotations, someone hasn't stepped up and took over the starting job. And he was at, not just noncommittal. He's like, well, he's a free agent. But I mean, I got the impression I got from Cutter, not just his words, but his body language. And then hearing Light talk about Sweezy's still hurt. If this Nelson character is there, they're getting him. I wouldn't do it. I would not do it. But the impression I get, they're going to pull the trigger on the guy if he's there. It's starting to sound like the Giants are going to pick him. But if he's available at 7, if Vegas had lines, I would put money on Nelson if he's available. I would not do it. I'm just telling you my impression. I'm separating professional from personal. Personally, I would not.
He'd end up being a home run, Steve. I'll end this podcast on that note. You're a bunt single. That would be a home run, Steven.
Come on. Are you going to end with an insult to me? Come on.
You're a beet salad, and this is chicken paprikash. I'm bringing that back into the
All right, get out of here, Aaron.